Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer. Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bors. So Theresa May met the 1922 committee today. Is this the end for her? James?
So, as we expected, her commitment to bring the second reading of the withdrawal agreement bill at the beginning of June has been enough. What the statement agreed between her and the chairman of the 1922 committee, Sir Graham Brady, says is that she will bring the second reading of the withdrawal agreement bill then, and then after that, he and her will sit down to agree on the timetable for the Tory leadership contest. Because whatever happens with that second reading, things are moving. If it is defeated, which is what is the expectation in Westminster, then she is out of options and the Tory party would need a new leader. If second reading passes, then remember that Theresa May has said that she will go as soon as this piece of legislation is through. And I think what the statement seems to be implying is that that kind of almost the process of her going could run concurrently with the process of legislation going through. I think the danger for Theresa May is that when second reading of this bill comes, this is what one loyalist MP was saying to me last night, is that people vote down second reading to bring a resolution to this crisis and hasten her departure from office. I think that they're trying to avoid that. That, I think, is a challenge. And I think the other issue here is, you know, at the end of March, the withdrawal agreement lost by 58 votes. Why should it now pass at the beginning of June when, if anything, the situation has got worse for her? I think Theresa May is just hoping that something turns up between now and then. But I think Mr. McCorber is going to be disappointed.
Katie, she's expertly kicked the can down the road a little bit longer. When the WAB does come back in a couple of weeks' time, is she going to face an even bigger defeat than 58, do you think?
I think it remains in the air, basically, how bad this defeat is going to be. I think there is probably, I don't know what percentage you've put it, perhaps a 1% chance that things go right for Theresa May. The hope in number 10 is that the Brexit Party actually make massive gains, defy even high expectations already, and really have such big wins, particularly in Labour areas, that Labour MPs then feel as though they need to get this through. But I think when it comes to the Tory numbers, there will be fewer Tories than the last time voting for this deal. I think there are Brexiteers who basically on the third vote were pushed themselves over the line, Dominic Raab, Boris Johnson, to pass a deal. And I think a lot of them have struggled to do that now because they look at the Brexit Party and they read from that they were right all along.
And so they need to be more Brexity.
Yeah, and you shouldn't have compromised or tried to go for a softer Brexit, that voters don't like the deal, so the idea of passing the deal isn't going to solve the Conservatives' problems. I think there's still some Brexiteers who would definitely vote for the deal in its current form because they think that once you're out, that is an improvement to now. But it depends what changes are made to this deal. And the fact is, are we going to see some form of customs arrangement? Are we going to see amendments added? And I think that's the issue. So I can't really see it moving. And I think also within government, there are figures who are actually sceptical of why Theresa May has decided to hold the vote so soon. And it's clearly because, as we've seen today, it's tied to her position. By doing this, she has got herself a bit more time and she has a small chance to perhaps have a happier legacy or way of being remembered if she manages to pass her deal. But if you took Theresa May out of the equation, I think you just looked at it in terms of trying to pass the withdrawal agreement, I don't think people think this is an opportune time.
So James, if she's defeated again in June, what's the mechanism of getting her out, even if it's politically infeasible for her still to stay on? Would the rules then have to be changed? And if so, doesn't that come with all the baggage that we've talked about on this podcast before?
I think the probably realistic expectation is that rather than have the rules changed on her, Theresa May, one of the nine people who voted against the rule change, who's most adamant against the rule change, said to me last night, you know, if second reading goes down, you know, you couldn't hold that tide back. And I think that rather than her waiting for them to change the rules on her, I think at that point she probably would see the writing on the wall. Also, this meeting of the voluntary party on the 15th, you know, it's non-binding. But to have the association chairman vote no confidence in you as the leader, again,
humiliating.
It would be a very, very messy ending. And I just wonder whether she, at that point, even Theresa May might accept that the game is up. I wonder as well whether there is some attempt to try and get second reading through by doing something different. You know, I think that we will see a lot of chatter in the weeks leading up to this vote about, you know, do you try and change something about the backstop just in the domestic legislation and see if that makes the bill more palatable and almost challenge the EU to say, no, you haven't ratified it. You know, I think they have to try something, because otherwise this thing is going down to kind of pretty much certain defeat.
But isn't that like passing the Malthouse Compromise, our end, and then going to the EU and saying, we want this?
Yeah.
The EU will just say, well, that's a unicorn.
I think the theory goes that you don't pass that. What you do is you take this language about alternative arrangements in the political declaration, you put it into UK law. Now, you're obviously right that you would not be... The EU would be technically within its rights to say, well, you haven't ratified this thing, so we're not going to ratify it. And it's a done thing. But I think the hope would be that you would put some pressure on and that if you did it in a way that was a little bit subtle, rather than just, we're taking the backstop out in its entirety and junking it, then you might have some hope that you would buy yourself some time.
And then I suppose at that point, a more Brexiteer leader could be in place who can make advantage of that.
Yeah, I think you know, if you think about this, if the second reading goes down, I struggle to see what positive legacy Theresa May has. And I think for that reason, I suspect that when it comes to second reading, it will be at the try anything phase of things.
And Katie, who has signalled that they were joining the leadership campaign today?
So right on cue, Boris Johnson has suggested during a Q&A following a speech that it is something when there is a vacancy, he will be interested in. So once there is a leadership vacancy, he will run to be leader. And this is good timing because in this week's Spectator, James has written the cover piece about Boris Johnson's chances. Now, I don't think it's a great surprise, Boris Johnson having leadership ambitions. And we have seen in the past few weeks various cabinet ministers, which is probably a harder position to be in and say you're interested in the job of leader, come forward and say they want to go for it. So I think now that it is in sight, the point Theresa May is going, we're going to see more horses coming out of the... Is stable the right term?
Yeah.
Blocks?
Yeah. We're going to go stable for now, yeah. But James, I think you can probably explain what Boris Johnson's chances are better than me.
I don't think it's going to shock anyone that Boris Johnson is running for leader. I think it has been quite clear for some time that he's planning to. My rough rule of thumb at the moment is the worse things are for the Tories, the better they are for Boris Johnson. And I think this cratering of a Tory poll rating has once more made him the man to beat in this contest. You know, if he is to make the final two, what he needs to be basically after the first few rounds, the lead Brexiteer in the race. And I think he is likely to be that now. He is picking up support, and from some unusual places too. I think people begin, because if you are a Tory MP and you want someone to deal with Farage, you know, he appears to be the person to do that. As one former cabinet minister said to me the other day, you know, you need a populist to beat a populist. And I think that is why he is beginning to get traction again. Now, you know, this is Boris, it's not going to be straightforward. There will be a large body of opinion in the parliamentary party determined to try and stop him. And, you know, the question as well becomes, you know, in 2016, you know, everyone says, oh, that obviously went wrong because his campaign manager, Michael Gove, pulled out and decided to run himself. But in truth, that campaign was going wrong long before that. I think Boris is much more organised and disciplined this time round than he was that time round. The Boris of 2019 is a different figure, I think. But I still think there are, you know, this is not going to be straightforward, just because there's so much water has gone under the bridge and there are so many people determined to stop it.
And Katie, in one of your political columns from a few weeks ago now, you were talking about Boris Johnson's chances and saying that he's not actually making friends with the MPs that he needs to get on side. Is he doing more of that socialising part of things, or is he still a bit of a hermit?
I think he's doing better. It's notable that during the local elections, he paid a few visits to MPs from the 2015-2017 intake, a group that he's been criticised previously for not making any effort to get to know, and a group that would be quite important if you need to get a large chunk of the parliamentary party to vote for you in a leadership contest. And for example, he went to Walsall North and helped an MP campaign there, and there's been a I think there's been more of an active effort, perhaps coming from his team, but at least with Boris Johnson playing along, to go and get to know some of the younger intakes of MPs. I also think that, I mean, I did speak to one MP this week who is I would say is quite a Remain-style MP, voted Remain, would ideally like quite a soft Brexit, but is coming around to the fact that things are changing and you are going to have to perhaps get a Brexiteer. But they still felt as though Boris Johnson was a step too far. They were saying that they could deal with someone like Dominic Raab a lot better because they just think Boris Johnson still has too much baggage. And I think it is a mixed bag. I think there are some MPs who are coming around to Boris Johnson because they look at the way the polls are and they think that Boris might get them that extra 5% in their area, which might help them cling on to their seat. And the more that happens, the higher the chance. But I still think for some MPs, he just is seen to be a very divisive figure, and that's his challenge.
I think there undoubtedly are some MPs who will never vote for Boris Johnson. I think the question becomes, if this becomes existential, you know, the survival of the Tory party is at stake, then what are the other answers? That, I think, is what... And I think a lot of Boris Johnson's pitch will be, you know, you need some... You know, I'm the only person who can deal with both Corbyn and Farage. But look, this leadership race is not going to be... It is going to be a very crowded field. It's not going to be straightforward. But I also think that a lot of it will be determined by the kind of precise circumstances in which it takes place. And I think, you know, to go back to something Katie was saying earlier in the conversation, there is a challenge, there is a big dilemma, strategic dilemma here for Boris Johnson, which is when this withdrawal agreement bill comes back, does he vote for it or not? I mean, that is that for both him and Dominic Raab, this is a very difficult question because, you know, on the one hand, not voting for it is the obvious way to shore up your base and your appeal, but voting against it, you know, to some of those MPs who just want this thing done, that will almost seem willful and will cause them problems. So I think the second reading of this bill is not going to be an uncomplicated choice for your Boris Johnsons and your Dominic Raabs.
James and Katie, thanks very much. And to hear more from James and Katie on Boris Johnson, and why not, tune in to The Spectator podcast coming out later today, where they will be speaking to Will Warden, who is Boris Johnson's former PR chief. Thanks for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end.